Hey, everybody, this is Pierre Quinn, and you're listening to episode number 62 of the Leading While Green podcast, where my mission is to help you live, learn, and lead with confidence. On this episode of the podcast, my guest is Karen Walker. Now, Karen is an executive consultant, she's an advisor, and she's the president of One Team, a consulting firm that helps senior leaders create internal strategies that support external growth. We talk about her book, No Dumbing Down, and what it's like to be an influencer for a billion-dollar company. We have a great conversation, so listen up. I want to thank you. I want to say thank you to everyone who continues to support this podcast. The Leading While Green podcast is continuing to grow because of your support, because of your listens, because of your shares, because of your likes, because of your comments on iTunes. It's making an incredible difference. And I want to encourage you to continue sharing this message of leadership with everyone that you know. We grow exponentially just about every month, and your support is a major part of that. Before we jump into the conversation with Karen Walker, I want to talk to you about a couple of things that I have going on my website, prcquinn.com. We got my free leadership course, 12 Tips to Help You Grow as a Leader. It's available there. Great course, 4-part video series, walk you through and your team through some of the fundamentals of leadership. And you really want to check that out. I also have my flagship leadership course, the Leading While Green Leadership Intensive. You really want to dive into that course. Deep dive, high quality video content. We really pull back the layers and help emerging leaders discover some of the tools and tactics that they need to be better leaders. So you want to check that out, maybe for yourself or maybe for somebody on your team. And also in November, I'm having a live leadership seminar. It's going to be highly interactive. It's going to be in the DMV, the Washington, Maryland, Virginia area, I guess DC, Maryland, Virginia area. And it's going to be some really, really good stuff that I'm rolling out. So make sure that you're on my leaders list, my email list to get all the updates about my leadership conference coming up in November. Okay, here's my conversation with Karen Walker.
Executive consultant, advisor, and president of One Team Incorporated, Karen Walker. Karen, thanks for joining us today.
I'm very, very happy to be here. Thanks for having me, Pierre.
So Karen, take us back. I mean, you have an interesting bio that our listeners got a clip of before our show started. Take us back before you had this consultancy, coaching high-performance leaders around the world. You were employee number 104. At Compaq Computer, which at that time Compaq computers were huge. What was that experience like with Compaq?
Well, I just have to laugh because they were huge, right? We were the first portable computer that was IBM compatible, which is a big deal in the business world then. But by portable, our computers weighed like 22 pounds. So they were huge. So yeah, that was back in the day. But just in terms of working and sort of coming into my own leadership and management there, you know, it was amazing. I left a large, you know, what was at that time, probably Fortune 100, maybe Fortune 50 organization. And I went to a startup, and 104 people might sound like a lot to somebody who's working in a small startup today, but it was quite a leap for me. And I went to a company because of the people that were going there. We didn't know at that time, those of us that were interviewing, what the product was going to be. But I kept seeing the leaders in the organization that I admired leaving and going to this new place that was surrounded in a little mystery. And so I interviewed, and I went over as a team of one at that point in my organization. And I grew it over the years to, you know, several hundred employees and thousands of contractors and consultants all over the world. And it was incredible. And it was, you know, it was literally, I love your tagline, right? To live, learn, and lead, because that's exactly what was going on in my life. You know, every day I was learning and leading in ways that, well, I just didn't come out of the womb knowing how to do. Mm-hmm. And so there was a lot of learning and leading on the job, if you will.
Take us back to some of those first days of a major responsibility, how did you get through those? Knowing, you know, how did you battle with maybe feelings of inadequacy or just things that you didn't know?
Yep.
How did you get past that?
Yep. Yeah. Well, I had a lot of support getting past it. So the first thing was just on the interview itself. I went over to interview the job, and I actually thought this organization was making hard drives in clean rooms. And I'm an engineer by degree, and because I thought that's what they were making when I interviewed, I said, well, I don't think I can do this job because I was would be in charge of all the physical infrastructure, and I didn't know how to build a clean room. So my immediate reaction was, well, I'd love to work with you, but I don't think I can do this work. And they're like, well, trust us, you can do it. I'm like, I don't think so. I don't know how to do that. I'm like, really? Trust us, you can do it. And so eventually I believed them and I took them up on the offer and I went in, and it turned out we weren't making hard drives. We were assembling computers, which was something I did at that time know how to do. And as the company grew, right, I went from, as I said, from this team of one to this this large organization. But, you know, my responsibilities grew from working with an infrastructure that at that time was about 25,000 square feet worth of space and stuff to about 11 million square feet by the time I left. Wow. And it was every day getting up and knowing that what I did or didn't do had a direct impact on the bottom line of the company. Because space was our limiting item, right? Whether or not we had enough factory space, whether or not we had enough distribution space, whether or not we had enough office space. And so every day it was, hey, if you don't get your job done, the company cannot fulfill its promise to its customers because we will have sold things that we cannot deliver. So it was, as I said earlier, it was sort of learning on the job, but it was also working in tandem with people around me, both my peer group as well as the excellent staff, to get things done. And so there were all kinds of sort of outside of the box thinking that we had to do in order to make that occur. I remember one instance, just to give you an example, we were growing so fast, Pierre, we literally had hundreds of people coming in the door every Monday. And we weren't set up for that, right? We were so far above our forecast and what our sales were, and then consequently what we had to deliver. But I couldn't build buildings fast enough, and I couldn't lease buildings fast enough. And we eventually took a parking garage and turned it into a temporary office space by putting in, you know, temporary flooring and walls and windows and doors, just so we'd have a place to put people and they could be on our campus while we got the next building built. And it was that sort of thing of, you know, what materials do we have and how can we use them to solve our problems?
Well, I mean, that's incredible. That mind blowing to think about for some of us. You got 100 new people coming into this organization, into our workflow every Monday, and we have to onboard them and we have to find them seats and we have to get them
right
acclimated to the culture. How did you keep from going crazy during those?
Yeah, well, I think that comes back to, you know, only do work you love, because I so both loved the people that I was working with and the amazing high performance team, both within my organization, but Compaq in general. But also, you know, we were really making a difference out in the world. We were allowing people to work anywhere. In some sense. Mm-hmm. And there was so much satisfaction from doing the work. And then personally, just being able to grow and develop every day, you know, you could really do as much as you wanted to do. There was not so much concern about stepping on toes or, you know, getting in someone else's box. There was a lot of white space to play in. And we were also committed to making sure that whatever needed to happen, happened. That people work together, and it was a thrilling environment to work in. And that's not to say that I did not have some times when I was exhausted and I thought, boy, I can't get on another plane, or, you know, we can't, you know, we definitely have to get better at this forecasting stuff because we're not going to be able to keep up. But, you know, growth covers a lot of sin. And so there was because we were growing so fast, even although we weren't as efficient as we could have been, and I'm an industrial engineer, so efficiency really matters to me. Even though we weren't quite as efficient as we could have been, we were definitely really effective in our work.
Now, you're an engineer by training, and then with Compaq, you're in charge of operations. And then now you're in this
this consulting space, this advisory space. When you, mm-hmm. when you were first going to school, was any of this on your radar?
I had no idea. No idea. I grew up in the desert of West Texas. I was a girl who was good at math and science, and I knew that I wanted to be an industrial engineer, primarily because my father was an industrial engineer.
Okay.
And I seemed to have the sort of the native talents to go into engineering. And so that's what I majored in. And I think like many people, I went to college really not having a clue about what I wanted to actually do once I got out. Mm-hmm. And I certainly, very few things in life I would do differently. And my college education is not one of them. I never spent much time being an actual industrial engineer, but the fact that it taught me how to think and how to solve problems, you know, that education was very worthwhile to me. But I had no idea. I mean, you know, technology at that point in time was not what it is today. And so I didn't envision at all the kinds of careers that were possible until I got out in the world and I learned the sorts of different things that you can do in life. In fact, one of the pieces of advice that I do give to people who are just starting out is I notice over and over again how people, we limit ourselves, right? Because mm-hmm. we don't know what we don't know. And so I think finding ways to help yourself think bigger and to really expand the possibilities for yourself and for your life at any stage of your career is one of the most important things that people can do for themselves.
So talk to us about your role now with mm-hmm. One Team and really how that came about. And then what's the scope of your responsibilities now?
So One Team was born out of a collaboration between myself and my now husband, Bob Moore. I left Compaq after 14 years. It had grown to about, $15 billion and about 15,000 employees. And it was, you know, it was just a very different place to work. And I left not knowing what I was going to do next. And I was fortunate enough to be able to do that, to walk away from that position and to say, I'm going to take some time to figure out what I'm going to do next, but I'm too busy and too busy in order to figure out what I want to do next right now. I have to get away from it. So I did. I moved from Houston to New York. I took some classes at Columbia. I went to sort of all the interesting conferences I wanted to go to. I read a lot of books. And I had a consulting job fall in my lap out in San Francisco. So I moved to a houseboat in Sausalito, and I drove over the Golden Gate Bridge to go to work every day, which was pretty amazing. And I met my now husband, who was a psychologist. He'd been working with organizations and senior leaders in organizations to help them sort out their strategy and execute on it. And I realized that was really what I missed about my job at Compaq, was working with senior teams to make things happen. So it really resonated with me. And we spent some time figuring out what we wanted to do next together. And we formed One Team out of his consultancy. And I've been doing it now for about 20 years. He retired several years ago, and I am still well in it and love it. Just love my work and love my clients.
I'm reading over your bio. It is your favorite seat on an airplane to see?
It absolutely is. That is, I say in my bio, right, that's where I'm most often found, is I'll often seat 2C. Mm-hmm. And that is my seat. So thanks for asking.
Okay. So from all these experiences, you authored a book, and by the time this podcast is released, I'm sure you'll be hot and heavy into the promotion of the book. So talk to me about how this came about. No Dumbing Down, a no-nonsense guide for CEOs on organizational growth.
Yeah, well, thanks for asking about that. I've been consulting now for a couple of decades, and I sort of never thought that I would write a book. And then I realized that, A, I have something to say to a broader audience, and B, the best way to reach that audience was through a book and then through speaking about the topics that are in the book. And the title, No Dumbing Down, is born out of one of the five strategies in the book that really help organizations grow. And it's for me all about aligning your internal strategies and the execution internally to support your external growth. And I think we get over-focused in terms of thinking about growth, about just the sales part of the organization. And definitely, you have to have a great product market fit and you have to have sales. But if internally you cannot keep up with those sales, or internally you cannot keep up in an aligned fashion, right? So maybe your engineering is lagging behind your marketing efforts, or your production is not able to keep up with your sales. But if those things are not aligned, then you really can't deliver on that promise that you made to your customer. And so the idea about no dumbing down is one of those strategies, which is all about how do we make sure that the teams that are in an organization are functioning at the highest possible level. So no dumbing down really means that everybody in the organization and on every team is working at their potential, because we know that in a team, the team will only be able to function at the level of the lowest performing member, right? So if you have superstars and you have some individual who's not performing at the same level as everyone else, then your A players have to dumb down. And then you're leaving a lot of performance on the table. And I think eventually A players will not want to work in that environment and they leave. And so it's detrimental both to the team and to the organization. And so this book is really these five internal strategies that I believe only senior leaders in an organization can be responsible for, because only they really have the breadth to see all of the issues in an organization. And they're also the part of the organization that's incented for the long term as opposed to the short term. And so that's written for senior leaders, but the intention is that someone who's not yet a senior leader but wants to be could read this book and really get a leg up on what it takes to move into that realm.
Give us an example of what maybe some potential tension between internal strategies and external strategies looks like.
Yeah. So there's always a competition, right, for resources in an organization. And we know that if we don't have sales, then nothing else happens, right? Mm-hmm. If you don't have customers and clients to deliver to, nothing else matters. My contention is, and my experience shows me, that just because we're able to make the sale does not mean that we're able to deliver on it, especially for an organization that's growing. And so some of the tensions that develop are, and these are natural and normal tensions, right? How do we align the resources in the organization so that we optimize all of the different functions rather than maximizing the individual function? Mm. So for example, if you put a lot of resources into sales and marketing, but you underfund engineering and development, perhaps if you're in software business, your software will not be able to be delivered functionally at the point in time that your salespeople have promised it, right? Or sometimes we put not enough money into the client success side of the house. Mm-hmm. So what you really have to do is look at all of those functions and decide what's most important for the coming period, the coming year, the coming 3 years, and make sure that your resources and your attention are divided up in a way that keeps all of them both in aligned and able to deliver at the time that you have committed to your clients.
Now, in order for organizations to have long-term exponential growth, there's some adjustments that need to be made. There's some changes. And I'm sure you've seen that at Compaq and then at consulting other companies. What are some of the reasons that organizations or even just senior leaders of an organization can get stuck? Kind of processes, behaviors, the status quo stuff, and not want to move ahead.
Yeah, it's processes, tools, and behaviors, right? So one thing is blind spots. Leaders not seeing the things that aren't working or not understanding what the levers are that help the things that are working actually function well. oftentimes another thing that will hold an organization back is, and I see this over and over and over again in growing organizations, is there's simply not enough talent in terms of next generation leaders to pick up the slack. And, you know, you're growing and all of your resources are constrained. People do more. They expect to do more. We expect to work longer hours and more days. But you have to develop that next generation of leadership so that you can take things off your plate as the organization grows. So sometimes I'll see that as an issue. I'd say that's fairly common. One of the things that was true for Compaq, and one of my big lessons there, is that Compaq was envisioned as a big company in the formative stages when it was founded. And so we thought about, we made provisions for, we were flexible around our processes and tools so that we would be able to grow. And we had that from the beginning. Now there's a continuum in the book that I call startup to grown up. Mm-hmm. And the idea here is that you can double back on that continuum, that for most of us, we think about startup to grown up as a one-way street, right? You begin as a startup and you end up as a grown-up company. But I think what can happen for an organization is that you get stuck in one of those modes when, in fact, you should apply the behaviors that are appropriate to the situation. So just to give you an example, if you're an old sort of stodgy grown-up company, you have a lot of processes and behaviors in place that that sort of support the status quo. And when something new comes along and you need a different sort of response, let's say the market has changed or you have a new nimble competitor, you may not be able to respond to that as quickly as you need to in order for your business to stay vibrant. And so what you need to do is figure out a startup behavior to respond to or to get in front of the market. And, you know, we see this all the time with old companies who are unable to pivot. And deal with and successfully fend off their new competitors.
One of the classic examples that we talk about in business a lot and also in leadership is the Blockbuster example.
Sure,
having a lion's share of the market and then this tiny startup coming along. What's the danger of thinking that you're too big to fail?
Well, I would say there's danger written all over that, right? And Blockbuster is an excellent example that even though they eventually saw the danger and tried to do something about it, they didn't have the internal wherewithal to successfully change their business model in the time period that was necessary to fend off a Netflix or a Hulu, or we have certainly a almost infinite number of choices where we can get our video from. So I doubt that it's from a lack of them thinking. Surely they had strategy sessions and they could see how the landscape was changing. But it was an inability to either place bets in the right place or the inability to execute as quickly as possible. That comes from, I think in some cases it comes from hubris, right? Well, we are large and we are successful and nothing that small will take us down, right?
Yeah.
And so that happens in some cases. In other cases, it's just not having either the risk. Large companies are often risk averse, right? And you see this in individuals as well, because that's who makes up these companies, right? So you have successful individuals who have a stake in the status quo. And so you don't want to lose what you have. And so you take less risk. A startup has less to lose, and so they will take more risk. And today, and particularly in the tech world, I can argue that there are so many formulas now that have been proliferated by our venture and venture capital and private equity firms that there's a little less risk in that. But certainly for the most part, large companies tend to be more risk averse, and that's how they miss, I think, these big shifts in the market.
What are some of the dangers in the wrestling between for a senior leader? I got a pile of stuff on my plate that's important, and then I have a pile that's urgent, and then I have a pile that's emergency, and then I have a pile of the long-term organizational health
How can we as leaders get tripped up when trying to manage those piles?
Yeah, so I often will tell my clients that an organization will sort of suck all the time out of you that you'll give it, right? There's right. no shortage to ask from an organization. So you have to sort out for yourself, right, to have my life be in whatever the balance is that works for you. How much time are you going to spend on the piles in total? I work with all of my clients to make sure that we have a rhythm and a cadence to looking at the big picture and taking time to think, because there are always urgent, important and urgent things that need to be done every day. And I think the more senior you are, the more complex your roles are and the more important and urgent things you have to do. So making sure that there's a cadence that maybe once a quarter, there's an offsite with the senior leadership team. Maybe you set for yourself some hours or days per month when you are looking at the big picture. But just making sure that that is in your schedule and you're disciplined about it, because no one is ever going to put that on your calendar, right? You have to put that on your calendar for yourself. It's not going to show up as a, hey, let's take an hour and all take time off and think the big thoughts. Those are just things you have to do for yourself. And they're hugely important, both for the organization, but sort of to go back to your key audience, for people in their careers, right? It's not enough just to put your head down and get your work done. That is very important. I don't mean to dismiss that at all, but you have to be able to lift your head up and look at the bigger, broader picture on a regular basis and say, am I still directionally correct? Am I still going where I thought I was going to go? Is the end still where I want to be? Have I veered? Has the landscape changed? And then adjust your actions accordingly so that you can be on a path during this sort of medium term period to get you where it looks like you want to go.
I know you might have to change names and even locations or you know, black out some of the details. But can you share with us maybe a couple of times over your 20-year consulting career where you know, you've been working with a client for a while and you said to yourself, yeah, this is why I do this work. This is why I get into 2C. You know, this is why I travel the country. This is a perfect example why I've committed to this mission.
Yeah, absolutely. So I get into 2C to take care of myself. Let's be clear about that. I spent a lot of time on the road, and I figured out after the first few years that sitting in 33B was not doing it for me. I'm just not able to function as well, and I need to be on when I get to my client, and I need to be functional and ready to recover when I get back home. So 2C is all about taking care of me. And I strongly urge your clients to, or your listeners, to take that in and to learn to take care of themselves early in their careers. But just in terms of why I do the work, so when I was at Compaq, I was in charge of, as I said, all the operating infrastructure. And what was very satisfying about that was we were building things, right? So when we finished building a building or a campus or a factory, you could see it, right? It was a really cool thing to be able to say, wow, that didn't exist before and it does now. And I get the same charge out of working with companies. It's why I work on companies that are growing, because I get a real kick out of seeing success of companies grow. And I see that. I have one client recently who's grown from a very small startup. I think we had about 20 people in the U.S. when I started working with them, which is a little small even for me, but I definitely had clients that size. And they've grown with double-digit growth year over year. They've just merged with a larger company, and they're now a $100 million revenue company. Wow. And I love that. I love that. I love seeing the people in the organization grow into these roles and into these challenges as they're presented. And it's not that everybody grows all along the way, right? Some people like to work for smaller companies, so they opt out. Some people don't have the skills and can't develop the skills either in time or at all in some cases to do the new jobs that are necessary for a growing company. But to see the totality of it really That's why I get up and go to work in the mornings. That company is one example. I have another client that I worked with several years ago who was a privately owned organization, and they had been growing single digits for many years and were actually a leader in the organization. But the leadership was really smart. They said, hey, our landscape is changing, our competition is changing, and we will, if we stay right where we are, we will eventually lose out. We will not continue to lead our market. We have to place bets in other areas. And so I worked with them on a strategic plan, and they made some changes to the direction they were headed. And they also went on to have double-digit growth and have been very successful in their field that they've taken on now, as they watched their old competencies in that part of the field shrink.
Those are amazing. And I know those are just a handful of all of your experiences over 20 years, not just at Compaq, but as working with one team and traveling across the country doing this great work. And we certainly appreciate your insights today on the podcast. Now, before we end our conversation, which has been rich for me, and I know it's been fulfilling for our audience, Karen, it's shameless plug time. So tell us where can we find your website, social projects, everything you want to see, track of you, give it to us.
I'm laughing because this was really hard for me initially in my consulting career. It was to learn how to do this. And then, you know, it was like, oh, it's not enough just to do good work. You have to tell people about it. So I can be found at Karen Walker US, Karen Walker US on Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram. Those are my main areas for social media. My website is karenwalker.us. So karenwalker.us. And then my book, which is No Dumbing Down, you can find a link to that on my website, certainly following the hashtag No Dumbing Down Book on Twitter, Instagram, will get you there as well.
I've had a conversation with Karen Walker, executive consultant, advisor, president of One Team, and all around consultant extraordinaire. Thanks for your time today, Karen. I wish you all the best with your work.
Oh, it was a pleasure. Thank you so much. Enjoyed speaking with you.
Great conversation with Karen Walker about this concept of no dumbing down and how much we really need to continue to reassess as leaders. We need to check and see, are we still headed in the right direction? Are we still focused on the target? Maybe the target has shifted and we need to shift as well. And that personal assessment is integral to leadership. Be sure to check out Karen's book and all of her social media handles. We posted those in the show notes so you can keep up with her and her work, and you can order a copy of No Dumbing Down. We also want you to stop by the website, prcquinn.com, and check out all the insights related to leadership. And that's about all I got for this episode. So until next time, take care and God bless.